I thought Dr. Kent's talk actually was my introduction because I was a young athlete that became an old pseudo-athlete and wound up getting a knee replacement a couple years ago after putting it off for a long time. And I can tell you, I wish I would have done it years earlier. Just as you said, it's a lot easier than it was years ago. I was out of the hospital in less than 2 days and back operating in 7 days and played golf in 16 days, and I'm hitting the ball longer again. So I recommend it. In fact, a bunch of my friends decided if I was going to hit the ball longer, they were going to get a knee replacement too, even if they didn't need it. Just like some of my friends, I did a regular hernia on a guy who was an attorney here in town, and 6 days post-op, he shot his age, which was 72 at the time. And so then I had this big influx of people from the country club wanting hernia repairs because they thought they'd play better. But So we're going to talk about something called sports hernias, which is a bad name, as you'll see, it's misunderstood. And I got into it after a long time. I've been doing hernias for 45 years, and then about 14 or 15 years ago, I decided after I left MD Anderson to really concentrate. I was doing hernias and stuff on the side and helping them out over there to concentrate my practice really on hernias first. And that led to me for really a better understanding of the anatomy of the area. And so then it led me to being involved with sports hernias, which no one really wants to do. So I'd be happy to go through this a little bit. And then I have no disclosures. My wife's a plastic surgeon. She has all the money. So I just kind of, and the rest of it goes to my grandkids. So, like that. So sports hernias are really misunderstood. And physical therapists, trainers, and a few orthopedic surgeons understand this entity. Most surgeons even, let alone most doctors, don't even believe it exists. I'll give you an example just today. At 11 o'clock today before I came over here in my office over in Bel Air, I was seeing a patient. Now, and athletes are all ages. This guy happens to be 71 years old. He's from Galveston. He ran the Boston Marathon. He was getting ready for the New York Marathon. Since February, he's had chronic groin pain. And he's gone on his own. He went to three or four different doctors and surgeons, and they all checked him and said, you don't have a hernia. You're just going to have to get over it. Well, the guy is excellent shape, and he runs all the time. So even though he's 71, some of the attitude of some of the doctors out there will say, well, just quit doing it. And I do that once in a while. I mean, I did have a 43-year-old attorney that came in and said when he got in some crazy position like this, he had pain right there. And I said, don't do it. And But this guy's serious, okay? Finally, he went to a physical therapist who said, you know what, you're having this chronic pain. Why don't you go see him? And I just saw him. And actually, he wants to get back in shape so fast, I'm going to operate on him tomorrow morning. But I tell you, it's very misunderstood. Now, I want you, I don't know about you, but if some of you want to tell this guy that he doesn't have pain and that this doesn't hurt and that the entity doesn't exist, you can do it. But I'm not going to go tell him that he's faking this, okay, because he's a pretty big guy. There's all kinds of names for this, okay? And anytime you see something that has multiple names or multiple different thoughts about it, you know that people don't understand it well. And you probably all heard this, everything from Gilmore's hernia, groin disruption, soccer groin. Really what it is, it's pain in the groin, and this area is very sensitive. And there's a lot of radiation from the back, from the hip, and other areas. So you really have to understand the anatomy, which is very confusing. And I will guarantee you, after teaching residents and faculty and people for 45 years, most surgeons that are even doing hernias don't understand the anatomy. They just fix the hernia without understanding all the details. So probably athletic pubalgia or groin pain is probably the simplest thing. And the problem is that these people most of the time don't have hernias. What is a hernia? Well, a hernia is really a weakness or hole in the floor with intestines or fat or something coming through it. Most of the people that I do hernias on don't really have pain unless it's pushing on a nerve or something. But patients with sports hernias come in crying of pain of various levels, okay? Let's see if we can get this to work. Now, the reason it becomes problematic is that there's all these different places you can have hernias. You can have them from previous incisions. You can have epigastric. You can have umbilical. Then in the inguinal area, where there's so many nerves and it's so sensitive, you can have a regular hernia that can be fixed, or you can have this chronic groin pain that needs a different approach. And it's pretty simple. I had several guys in the office this morning came in with a bulge. Pretty simple. That's probably a direct inguinal hernia. We can go in, make a little incision over, push it back in, and I'll show you how we fix it. And then you can have a direct hernia, as you see here. See if this shows up here or not. And an indirect hernia, like you have in children, but sometimes they don't open up until they're adults. And there's a little sac that comes down from where the testicle comes down, because embryologically, that testicle starts by the kidney and then has to move down. And if that sac reopens, then you can have intestine, and you can have all kinds of things in there. And so you can fix those pretty simply. And then you can have inguinal hernia, you can see down below. The femoral hernia above, most commonly seen in women that have had children, that area gets a little lax beneath the inguinal ligament, and it comes down along that nerve artery vein and lymphatics there. And so occasionally you'll see that in a man, but it's more common in a female. And this anatomy has been talked about for years of being very misunderstood. And I have to admit that even though I've done hernias for 45 years, it's probably only about since about 2001 that I really understood what I was doing. And so you'd have to understand these triangles. I'm not going to teach you all the anatomy of this area, but there's a medial triangle, a lateral triangle, and a femoral triangle, and you can get hernias through those. And how do you fix those? It's real simple now. Starting in about 2002, I started using this little proline hernia system, a little mesh that I put in there, and I've done about 8,000 of those now since 2002, which makes the pain much less. Outpatient, go home within an hour, they can shower, eat, walk that day, and I have people going back to playing sports, and depending on age, everything you heard about, weight, health, maybe a week to 4 weeks, depending on how big they are. Now, and this just shows you the mesh in place. It's really simple. So that's a hernia. And you got to remember, some guys really like their hernias. And these guys think that this really dresses up a man. Most places in the world don't like this. The nice thing about this technique, I can do it in the operating room. I can do it in a third world country. I can do it under local, all kinds of stuff. Now, in the past, it was really bad because, as you can see, these guys in the past, in order to fix hernias, they would just chop off the testicles and the scrotum. And obviously, this guy here in the middle doesn't look too happy with this. So this is why there's confusion, because people say, well, you've got a hernia. You go into a doctor and he says, you don't have a hernia. You're just going to have to get over it. Well, a sports hernia is a strain or a tear, injury to the groin or the lower abdomen. And there's multiple things that go into this. So if you go in with one idea, you're going to miss most of the patients. And because this is so different for most people, they don't understand it. And to be honest with you, the only reason the, quote, incidence of this is going up is because trainers and physical therapists and a few orthopedic surgeons understand and realize this is a real entity. If you talk to a lot of my surgeon friends here in town, they're going to tell you this doesn't exist. You're crazy. They just got a little pain. Wait, give them some anti-inflammatories and wait till it goes away. Well, there's several different things that can happen here. You can have a posterior wall injury. You know, the intensity and the training that goes in today are amazing to me. I played college baseball, football, and a scholarship for baseball. Nothing like it is today. I have two grandsons in high school. He mentioned Seven Lakes, one playing sports there and the other at Westbury Christian. These kids, when they're 15, 14 and all, they already have trainers and strength coaches and all kinds of stuff. We didn't have any of that when I was going to high school and college and all that. And so they're in such good shape, and the intensity is so hard that we're seeing more of this as well. So it's recognition and the fact that the athletes are in better shape and more expected of them, and it's a higher intensity injuries. So it's been suggested that, like I said, that this may be increasing in incidence, but I think more or less it's recognition and what's going on. There may be a bit increase in the severity of the injuries because of the endurance and the training and the intensity. And most doctors won't recognize this at all. So I think all of you know this. I mean, everybody in this room probably is familiar with the entity of groin pain, either the things that happen with soccer and with hockey, with sprinting, with all kinds of different issues. Like the guy today, 71-year-old, that's a marathon runner. And what happens a lot of times with these athletes, why does somebody in good shape like JJ get injured? Well, they loosen up, they warm up, and then they go out, play a little bit, and then they come back and sit and rest for a few minutes. Things tighten up. Then they don't loosen up again, and they go right back out and try the same intensity, and the things get ripped. And so we're going to look at some of the anatomy. I'm not going to try to totally make you understand all of this because it is a complicated area. But you can imagine here, you've got all these, this external and internal oblique. You've got the rectus fascia coming down. You've got the adductors coming up in here. And then you're putting a lot of pressure on these areas. And all these muscles in here, let me just see, there's the pointer is right here. Let's see if we can see which one this is here. Well, that's okay. Here we go, I think. Well, if you look at the adductor longus right there, that's one of the ones in this area that gets damaged most frequently. Right at the attachment there, adductor longus, you see the little white attachment to the bone right there. And I think I got a couple better pictures that I can show you here. So what you see here is you've got the muscles that are all very well developed, and they're pulling in different directions. So you've got the external and internal obliques here, the rectus here, and the adductor here. These are going to contract and pull this way against the bone. These are going to contract and pull up way against the bone. So one of the first things that can go is the external oblique can rip, and the transversalis are very thin. So on the layers over here, you have the external oblique, the internal oblique, and the transversalis. Down here in the groin, you have the external oblique, and then there's an opening for the external ring. You have the internal oblique, which is lateral and medial. It doesn't come all the way down. And then you have the transversalis, which is very thin. Both of those can get ripped very easily. And if not there, then the adductor can go as well, depending on where the main strain is. So since they attach both of this, and I put some of this in, I won't spend much time on it, but since all these muscles attach to the same area, the bone, the pubic ramus, pubic tubercle, you can imagine if one is contracting this way and one is contracting this way, something has to give, okay? So if you look here, this just shows you again what goes on here, the contractions in the different areas. And so the weakest area, and depending on how they're pulling, is going to pull. So most commonly, you'll see external oblique injured first, then transversalis, then rectus, and then adductor. And you've got to be sure you know which ones the patient has, and sometimes you don't know till you get in there. And you can tell this a little bit, like the guy today, his major problem was when I touched the attachment of the pubic of the adductor to the pubic tubercle, he had severe localized pain. So you can inject it, you can get minor relief for a period of time. Most of these patients, unless they want to quit working out and exercising, it's going to come back. Occasionally, you'll have a bleed or a tear in the muscle itself. Most commonly, it's right where the adductor attaches to the pubic tubercle. And so it's easier to take care of even than when it bleeds into the muscle. Now, what do? Well, this is what you're all very familiar with. You know, you heat it. If you look at athletes, when I get athletes, they're in the middle of a season or so, or what I'll do is we'll warm them before they go out. We give them anti-inflammatories before they work out. There's a tendency for many people just to take Advil, Aleve, all those things after they already have the pain. You want to give it to them before they do the workout because it decreases the inflammation. And then afterwards, you ice it. So it's warm and then ice, okay, afterwards. And if all of this doesn't work, then usually they start to get a workup. And I get some patients in that have had multiple MRIs, CAT scans, ultrasounds, all kinds of stuff to rule it out. And the reason for this, a lot of times they'll come in to the orthopedic surgeon or some other doc with what they think is hip pain, or they'll have groin pain that's radiating. So you really don't know what the problem is. Is it coming from their back? Is it coming from their hip? And these guys are in really a lot of pain, most of them. As you can see here, he's definitely not happy. And we call it the like stuff, but you know, I see it in so many different sports, not just, it's real common, obviously, in soccer or hockey, but I see rugby players, I see sprinters, I see football players, all these people that are really in good shape and then have a sudden intense release of muscle mass. One of the things, the MRIs and all this kind of stuff, ultrasound, are more of a help to rule out other problems. And so if you don't really know what's going on, a lot of the golfers that I take care of over the years would have labral tears that would radiate into the groin. They didn't really have a true hernia, and they didn't have a true sports hernia. They had a labral injury. So you want to be sure that it's not coming from the hip. But in general, all these studies don't really help you very much to find out what's going on with the sports hernia. So I'll give you another example. This is a 28-year-old guy from here in town that does powerlifting. And he would warm up, do the big powerlifting, and he'd powerlift like this, if you know. And he ripped the attachment of the adductor longus away from the pubic tubercle partially. So then he waited a while, got some injections, kept going back after it again. And what had happened there is not only did he have a chronic pain and tear, but the pubic tubercle and the bony attachment became hypertrophied. And so I've seen a number of patients now that have had chronic problems with the attachment of the adductor where they get hypertrophy of the bone. And in addition to releasing the adductor, I actually have to go in there with a chisel and hammer. I feel like a real orthopedic surgeon then, you know, I get all these toys that they play out, the chisels and hammers and the rongeurs and all that. And so I get to play a little bit like that. And you take off that bone as well. And so what he had mainly, his pain mainly came from the adductor, although you've got to look at other things in the groin while you're there. So what do you find when you go in? And like I mentioned, sometimes you don't know exactly what you're going to find. First of all, you go in, sometimes you'll see edema of the tissue. Just like when you sprain an ankle, you're going to get swelling. If you have injury to the groin, as you go through the tissues, it doesn't look right. These are young people. They shouldn't have that edema in there. Then you get down to the external oblique, and you can see that it's attenuated and spread out or ripped, sometimes ripped like they're an 80-year-old guy. Then you open that up. A lot of times you'll find problems with the nerves, okay, the ilioinguinal and the iliohypogastric nerves. Sometimes it's bled into the area. You have scarring. I've seen where they've had neuromas. The ilioinguinal and the iliohypogastric nerve can swell. You can have chronic pain. We also see this with regular hernias, sometimes with recurrent hernias, where people have gone in, put stitches through the nerve and didn't see it because they don't look for the nerves. So they can also have associated problems like a varicocele or hydrocele, partial disruption of the adductor, tear of the external internal. All those things can happen. So when you go in, you have to be prepared to take care of all of this, depending on what you find. And there is, at this point, there are no good studies that can tell you exactly what you're going to find when you get in there. So the first thing I do when I get in is I look at the external oblique. Is it ripped? We're going to open it anyway, so we're going to repair it. And then you go in and you look at the nerves. And these are misunderstood nerves. There's actually another nerve, the genital femoral, that comes out with this. But most commonly, through the open approach, you're going to damage if you're going to have a problem with the ilioinguinal or the iliohypogastric nerves. And you can see a lot of times these patients have had multiple injections. They've had bleeding into the area. They've had tear of the muscle, all of which leads to scarring and then chronic pain. So you've got to get rid of those nerves. And I'll tell you about that in a second. Okay, and then you look, you take the cord structures and you pull them over, make sure they don't have a hernia. Less than 5% of the patients with sports hernias have a real hernia. They may have a weakness of their posterior floor. If they do, you can either repair it if they're young, or if it looks like it's starting to bulge, I can put a real lightweight mesh in there. I have these Ultra Pro and things that I use on thin athletes and stuff to protect the floor. Okay? And then this just shows you sometimes all you have to do is repair the floor before you repair the external oblique. You remove the two nerves. And the nerves give you transient numbness beneath the wound and into the thigh. That goes away in a couple of weeks. The other nerves take over. So these are sensory nerves. Most of the people are so happy to have pain relief that they don't care that it's a little numb for a couple weeks. And then afterwards, the sensation comes back from the other nerves. Now, there's a big controversy with some surgeons saying, couldn't you do this laparoscopic? I do a lot of laparoscopic gallbladders, appies, other things like that. But if you think you can do this all laparoscopically, then you don't understand the anatomy, because you can't get to the adductor, you can't get to the ilioinguinal nerve, you can't get to the transversalis or any of those. You can repair the posterior wall if you have a hernia, but you can't do all the other things that cause pain in these patients. So I do not like the laparoscopic approach. Generally, if they do a laparoscopic approach, they have to go in anterior as well to fix it, okay? Now, what do I let them do? Well, they go home the same first day because we have super glue on them. They can shower, they can eat, they can walk, they can do whatever they want. First couple weeks, they can go to the park and walk as much as they want, or stationary bicycle or so, but I don't want them to do heavy lifting, straining. Then they get 2 to 4 weeks, depending on how severe they are, of physical therapy, training, get back in shape, and then we start up on a program to increase their activity again. So if it's done properly, most of these people are back playing sports in 4 to 6 to 8 weeks. They can do regular things, like get around, go to work and all that, in a day or two. Now, I'm going to summarize by saying this is, again, really a misunderstood thing. And it's become almost the people think it's really crazy. Some docs here think that this doesn't exist. Why are you doing it? Other doctors, there's a doctor in Philadelphia, for example, who I've known for years. He was a transplant surgeon. Then he went to Massachusetts. Then he opened up this clinic in Philadelphia. I've known for like 35 years. And people go from all over the country, all over the world to him. He charges cash only, about $50,000 to do this. And owns the clinic and all that. And why? Well, because there's very few people in the country that are willing to do this for insurance. And there's probably, I don't even know of many people in this area of the country that are willing to do this, because it takes the time to understand this anatomy and know what it is to get them to do it right. So I think there is increased recognition now by you all, not by most general surgeons yet. And I think the things I mentioned, that if they don't respond to conservative therapy, and believe me, I try to talk people out of it. I spend more time trying to talk people out of things. I get these 12 and 13-year-old junior high school athletes in there, and I try to talk their parents out of it, and I want to see how serious this is, because sometimes you're treating the parents and not the kid. And sometimes I got to find out if they really, really are having this chronic pain, or what have they really done, or do they want immediate access? And I tell you, one of the other things you have to be careful, I've been doing this for a long time now. The worst possible patient you can have in terms of postoperative pain is a 22 or 25-year-old male, okay? They are the biggest babies you will ever see in your life. Females seem to do well with pain. Older men are happy to be alive after the operation. Older women have had children and all this stuff. You give me a 22 or 25-year-old perfectly healthy male, and I can promise you he's going to think he's dying after the surgery, okay? So that's another reason why people don't want to mess with this. But it's a real entity, and we have to be sure we screen out the ones that don't need surgery first. And so I don't really operate on everybody I'm sent, but most of the time other people have seen them and worked with them for 2 months or years before I see them. So I'll just say, I think that that you're going to see, if you just talk to a lot of different docs on the outside, they're going to tell you that this is just kind of make-believe. I think that in your own practices and all, you're going to see that this actually exists, and try to, you know, see if you can treat them conservatively first. But if they don't, then have somebody see them that's taking care of this. Questions? Rebuttals? Okay. Excuse me? I'm sorry, I couldn't hear you. I was asking about bedside sonograms and stuff. Yeah, I think there's a couple things you can do there. Sometimes you can see if there's a real hernia, okay? Sometimes you can see if there's scarring or other things. Or some people say, I can't do it myself. They can tell whether or not there's a labral tear or so like that. I'm not good enough with the ultrasound to do that. So if I think there's something else going on, I'll get a formal ultrasound or MRI. And if you're going to order any of these tests, make sure that the people doing it understand that you're ordering it for a sports hernia or an injury. Otherwise, they'll just do a routine MRI or ultrasound, or and they won't look at what you're interested in. So you got to be sure that you find a imaging center that does it properly. Not everyone will do it. Other questions? Yes, ma'am. Real inguinal hernias won't go away on their own, and all the praying in the world won't make them go away. But you can delay, if they're not in a lot of pain, you can delay the therapy for it until they're off season, okay? And if you're a 95-year-old with a bad heart and had a stroke, you may not want surgery for it. But what we worry about is a couple things, that the intestine at some point will get caught in there, or that it'll continue to grow and get bigger. So if you see a hernia in an otherwise healthy young athlete, you can say at some point you're going to need surgical repair of this. Doesn't have to be done today, but sometime off season after you're done with football, baseball, but then you can have it repaired. Other questions at all? Yes, ma'am. Verticals on this. Yeah, it it's not so much a growth plate because the bone's not supposed to grow there, but it's a attachment of the adductor to the pubic tubercle right there. And there it's a tendon, basically. There is a growth plate in the pubic symphysis where it doesn't totally close. Just like in women that are having children, that area can open up and then come back and close during pregnancy. The hormones will let it release so they can deliver and come back. In young men, I'm not sure how late it would be, but you can see it in 16, 18-year-olds. It might go up in their 20s. That area is not totally fused yet, so they can have some slippage there and pain there as well. But most of the time, the adductor where it attaches is a very firm. And a lot of people get worried, well, what are you, if you're cutting the adductor longus, is that going to cause a weakness or so? And the answer is no, because the adductor brevis and magnus and all those, and the muscle is still there, and it attaches to the others. Sometimes if it's a big disattachment, you can suture it to one of the others. But releasing it there and then putting, what I do is I put steroids and long-acting pain medicine, Exparel or so, microsomal marcapane that gives them a few days of pain relief so they don't have to take any pain medicine.